Welcome back to the FactSet Insight podcast. We are lucky to have today with us again, Matt Hoffman. And before we begin, I did want to do a shameless plug for my brother who wrote the Karate Kid Legends movie. It's out in theaters. Everyone should go and see it. It's a wonderful movie. Welcome back, Matt, to the FactSet Insight podcast. And Matt, as we have talked in the past, we were so happy to have you here before. And you were the former staff director for the House Financial Services Committee. Prior to that, was policy advisor in the Speaker's office in the House and also staff director at the Senate, policy director, at the Senate Finance Committee. Now you work at BGR Group here in Washington, D.C. And we're so glad to have you back. Joining us on the FactSet Insight podcast.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. I was raised on those Karate Kid movies, so I hope everyone else goes out and sees the latest one. I can't wait to go see it myself.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you for being here, Matt. You were such a hit last time. We needed you back. We had talked about having you back after the first 100 days. We have completed the first 100 days, and everyone's talking about tariffs. So Matt, I thought we could start there.
Sure. So I think we're all sort of going to figure this one out together. I think there's a court case that came down last night that effectively said the process by which the president had levied these across the board tariffs doesn't work. And it's, he can't use that process, and the way that he went about it was incorrect. So they're going to challenge that, of course. Then we'll see how that goes. But it'll probably, at the very least, have to go all the way to the Supreme Court. But this does then suggest, you know, what are they going to do in the interim? And then how does this sort of play into the broader trade narrative that they're trying to set up? I think it then, you know, questions about what's the Hill going to do. There was a big push, I think, in the Senate, maybe, or even the House to try and move some legislation, sort of clarifying both locations and processes around tariffs. It's not clear that they need to do that now. So I think that's going to lower that threshold there. But I think generally speaking, we're all going to sort of feel this one out together.
Yeah, Matt, I think one thing I try to tell everybody is that we still do have three co-equal branches of government. So when things happen in the administration, the courts can respond. And as you mentioned, the courts did last night. And I do think as we go forward, we'll still continue to see some activity on the Hill with regard to tariffs, whether it be through trade policy or through the tax provisions. Which leads us to our next discussion point, which is the big, beautiful bill. And we had some activity in the House last week and wanted to kind of follow up with you on that.
Yeah, so it was obviously a big day for the House Republicans. They got that bill out. narrow margins notwithstanding, it was quite the process. Bunch of committees going late into the evening. Rules Committee, you know, meeting again at 1 a.m. But they were able to get it done, and it was quite a big deal. And I think at this point, the assumption has to be that this bill is going to make it to the president's desk, whether it's in June or July. I think it's sort of the open question. But given the way it came out of the House and particularly the contours of the bill, it should give everyone a sense of hope that this will get done. If for no other reason than this is how we're going to sort of stave off a question about the debt ceiling, since the bill provides sort of a solution to that, at least on a temporary basis.
So that is interesting. One point I wanted to follow up on with you. I mean, in the Senate, we have Votorama where they work all night, and that's a constant thing that happens each session of Congress. But in the House, it's highly unusual for them to stay all night, right?
Well, the way it made it to the floor was unusual, yes. And they were negotiating all the way up until the bitter end to try and get that thing done. And that's ultimately how they closed it. It's somewhat different process in the Senate where the manager's amendment or a substitute amendment, however you want to think about it, once that package is sort of comes together. And I should say, it's not clear that that's how they're going to go about it, but it does seem to be that's the conventional wisdom right now, is that there will be a sort of a rewrite. The Senate will put its thumbprint on what the House passed, and then that'll go to the floor. And then in real time, senators will be able to offer amendments on the floor to try and alter that bill before it comes to a final vote.
So that's really leads to my next point, which is kind of the process for crypto legislation. And We spoke last time and we really thought that stablecoins was just going to be moving on its own. Now we've seen that there's been a little bit of a hiccup in the Senate with the stablecoin legislation, and the House has introduced market structure legislation, which talks about kind of the broader market structure for crypto. Do you want to talk a little bit about that since you Sure. are all knowing on this?
I appreciate that, but there's a lot of people who are got this better. What I'd say is that the Senate had some fits and starts with the Genius Act, but it appears that they're on their way to passing it. And it should not be understated how big a deal that is. In the previous Congress, the Senate largely left crypto legislation to the side. And as a result, members never really got a chance to sort of dig into the policy and figure out, you know, how they wanted to approach the topic. This time around, they've not only gotten to the floor there, it looks about to be passage, and they're going to have done that in the first, you know, six, seven months or so. It speaks to sort of what Leader Thune has been able to do and how Chairman Scott, Senator Lummis, Senator Hagerty have been able to corral the votes to get there. And the Democrats, too, led by Senator Gallego and Warner, who helped, you know, get this and shepherd it to the floor. There's some few outstanding amendment items that they're going to have to dispense with. But I think all expectations are is that when the Senate comes back next week, by Friday, by the time they fly out, they will have sent a bill over to the House.
Can we just talk about one of those amendments? I noticed that Senator Marshall added his legislation that for credit card swipe fees. How do you see that playing out?
Well, it's an ongoing conversation. This is a priority for the Senator Marshall, and going back, you know, two Congresses now. And so, you know, there was a last year in the Senate, he attempted to get a vote on this a number of times. It never really came to fruition. And I think this is the first non-existential threat legislative item that made it to the Senate floor this year. It's notable that this is how the leader wanted to start the Congress. Just to give a sense of how important this issue area is over the next few years. And, you know, it does have jurisdiction inside the Banking Committee. So he was able to file his amendment. Now, it won't be germane to the process, so it'll need 60 votes to get adopted. And I don't think it has 60 as of yet. But it's a bill that never has really gotten a vote. So it's not entirely clear where the votes are going to land, and given, you know, you see it's Marshall Durbin, so this is a bipartisan amendment. It doesn't really cross cut across ideological lines, so it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. I think the conventional wisdom is it may not pop up here, meaning it won't be something that I think derails or gets added to the stablecoin bill, but I would expect this comes back sometime again this year.
So just to go back, so this bill in the Senate is called the Genius Act. The House has the Stable Act, Stable Genius, no pun intended. And let's talk a few minutes about how the House, you know, has been dealing with the Stable Act and then also their broader market structure proposal.
Yep. So the House, the Financial Services Committee marked up their Stable Act a few months ago, and they are now set to mark up the new version of the market structure bill. They'll have a hearing next week, and then the following week they'll assumably proceed to a markup on that. So the House will have, or at least the Financial Services Committee will have, pulled together two products that sort of compromise the entirety of at least the first tranche of crypto legislation: stablecoin and market structure. I think at this point the House is looking to combine both and get this all done in one shot. I think with what the Senate has gone through on stables, there's an open question about can the Senate process two bills at once. I don't know that it remains to be seen, it remains to be seen sort of which theory of the case is going to play out. I think there's something to be said about the fact that a stablecoin bill combined with a market structure bill answers all the questions about sort of the cash ledger of a transaction, how something moves from the commodity, the securities world to the commodities world. I do think there is an argument to be made that that holistic view of the, at least this sort of setting guardrails and regulation for the industry is the right way to start. But then there's sort of the practical reality of dealing with a stablecoin bill that's coming from the Senate into competing priorities in both appropriations bills and reconciliation bills, and how much the Congress can process all at once. So I think as the House starts to look at the sort of the, you know, the June and July months here on their legislative calendar, they're going to have to make a judgment call about where, how far they can push this process into the summer.
And I just think it would be appropriate now for us to give a shout out to your former staff. They worked really hard to kind of make all of this happen. And I think they've done a great job. But this, in conjunction with all the work that's going on with these roundtables at the SEC, do you feel like there's a lot more coordination between the House, Senate, and the administration?
Oh, night and day. I mean, you've got the SEC holding crypto roundtables specifically on sectors within the crypto industry. You have conversations back and forth between the regulators and the Hill on how to draft, how to put these guardrails in place so that they can be effectuated once the law is passed. You have a Treasury Department that is bending over backwards to help the process along, provide resources. You have a crypto AI task force inside the White House to help usher this along. It could not be a bigger disparity between what happened in the last Congress and now. And all that is to the good, right? I mean, it really presents a hopeful picture for getting some clarity here about how the ecosystem is going to grow and how the U.S. can really become a home to a lot of the developers and founders.
Yeah, that's an interesting distinction between this administration and the last one, the coordination. So Matt, one thing I wanted to talk about, last time we spoke, you said that there were some deadlines and some timeframes that we had to meet for this Congress. What are your thoughts now as we're kind of way beyond the 100 days or beyond the 100 days?
Well, you have to sort of tip your hat to Speaker Johnson and Leader Thune, because they have navigated this chaotic first 6 months quite well. They have met sort of all the deadlines, right? That we talked about, sort of a funding deadline in March. They got that bill passed. The government's now funded to the end of the fiscal year, which would be in September. The reconciliation bill is on its path to, or on its way to getting to the president's desk once the Senate does its work on there. And incorporated in that bill will be at least a temporary extension of the debt ceiling. Those were sort of the first three big deadlines that we were all sort of scratching our head to figure out how they would get that done. But it does appear, if not by the July 4th recess, that by the end of July, that bill will make it to the president's desk. The next big deadline is going to be the end of September, which is the end of the government's fiscal year. And the real question there is, how does funding materialize for the FY26 process? And the reason that's a big question mark is because the if we remember back to the beginning of the year, DOGE and Elon Musk and finding inefficiencies in the way government funding works, they have proposed a series of cuts, when they call it rescissions, in the way some of the discretionary side of the ledger is built out. And they're proposing to claw back and end various accounts and funding where that money is no longer necessary or hasn't been spent well. And that bill, I think, should, you know, is ostensibly come through the House and to the Senate sometime in the next 2 months. That has to pass, or it doesn't have to pass, but that is sort of the end of the sort of the government efficiency piece. And then you move into FY26. FY26 is going to require 60 votes in the Senate, and typically it should be a bipartisan measure in the House to fund the government. We will see, right? There was a big fight or a lot of fallout in the March funding exercise, where Democrats in the Senate sort of crossed the aisle to help Republicans get that bill to the president's desk. And there was a lot of fallout on that. Some suggested they shouldn't have helped at all. They should have denied the votes. Easy to second guess after the fact. But I do think that is going to carry over into September. The second thing to keep in mind is that the argument to fiscal conservatives in March was you should accept a CR, a static funding of federal government levels. We should pass that now, because if we shut down, we'll have to deal with government funding, and that will delay our ability to work on a reconciliation bill. And so fiscal conservatives sort of accepted that premise, because they also knew that rescissions package we just talked about, that would be coming later. Well, once we get to September, in theory, this rescissions package has been passed and the reconciliation package passed. So the argument to conservatives is going to be, I guess, accept, continue to fund the federal government at at the last fiscal year of the Biden administration, or, you know, we should drive for real cuts and savings now. So I think there's going to be a vote problem on the Republican right, and there's going to be a vote problem on the Democrat side, unless these numbers reflect different priorities. Now, we're a long way off from that, and so I don't want to suggest that's a problem that has to be solved today. But if we're looking around the corner and looking around the horizon, government funding in September is going to be a real question mark.
And then we'll still have a defense authorization bill, too, that we're going to have to do.
Yep. And so the NDA was marked up in the House before the recess went. Typically, it's something that they deal with early in June. So we would expect the House to consider the NDAA shortly, and then obviously it carries over into the Senate, where they'll. It's unclear whether they'll do a markup this year, mostly because they've been so consumed with reconciliation and NOMS. But I would assume that they would like to do something on that. Typically, NDAA winds up being the least of the controversial pieces. However, in recent years, it has grown more complicated, and so we'll see if it becomes a train for, you know, extraneous provisions and things like that.
And you mentioned nominations. So where are we in terms of nominations? Are we where we thought we would be, or are we behind?
I would say things are moving. I think there's always going to be frustration as, you know, certain sectors and stakeholders want their nominee in there right away. But it's a big government that needs a lot of people in there. You've got Atkins confirmed over at the SEC, all the cabinet noms have been put through. We're now into the DepSec and undersecretary layers. I think they're moving their way through a Bowman nomination. So that will hopefully get that soon. And we'll hopefully have a CFTC chair up soon as well. So all of this is coming together. And I think we are in a better spot, certainly, than we were 100 days ago, or I guess 6 months ago. This is, again, all to the good for our, you know, for crypto. Because now I think they can start promulgating real regulations. And I think that's the push and pull right now, is how fast, how quickly can legislation make it to the president's desk? And then how quickly can the regulators come behind them with some rules? Or can those rules come out before the legislation passed, because they're all working together so well?
Can we talk for a second about the banking regulator nominations? Like, where are we with respect to the CFPB, FDIC, OCC?
So I think that is largely still caught up in this question of consolidating the regulators. So it is something that the Treasury Secretary noted early on in his remarks. I think it was in March or April, where this was, you know, the idea of, we have too many regulators, we can roll some of them up, and we can, you know, make this more efficient. So it's not to say that, you know, Travis Hills or FDIC that couldn't work, you know, right away. Or some of these other, like, they've nominated someone for CFPB as well. But I think there's a balancing act between getting those nominations through and recognizing that administrations would like to do some consolidating of the regulators. And the question is really just going to be, do you prioritize those noms knowing that they're going to try and close some of those gaps, or do you try and put them through either way?
Yeah, and it's interesting with the CFPB. I noticed that Jonathan McKernan is now over at Treasury. So they're not going to continue with his nomination for CFPB.
Yeah, and I think they're talking about Calabria moving over to CFPB, which I think it's a fascinating turn of events, coming from previous administration where he was over at FHFA, and now he's coming over to CFPB. They'll carry over a lot, and, you know, again, you know, with what the president said on Fannie and Freddie and the conservatorship, it's just a very fascinating dynamic to see how those perspectives are going to play out.
Absolutely. And do you think that there's a role that the House Financial Services Committee and Senate Banking Committee can play going forward in those nominations and those discussions?
Well, certainly the Senate Banking is going to will have to produce those noms and get them out, for sure. And I think particularly on the housing side, House Financial Services Committee is going to have a lot to say on that. I know Subcommittee Chair Flood and Chair Hill have both talked about housing as a priority for them. Above and beyond just the check-ins with the regulators, I think they are actively trying to pull together policy sets that would advance the president's agenda when it comes to housing.
Just on AI, I had a couple questions for you about that. Where are we on AI? Is there going to be any type of a discussion about a framework for artificial intelligence in this Congress?
So it's funny you mentioned that. We were just talking about this in another venue. It seems like the AI conversation has stalled a little bit. And the reason I think the AI conversation has stalled is because there's been such a focus on getting this crypto work done. And a lot of the people who are working on the crypto piece are in similar ways going to play a role in the crypto legislation. A lot of it, like, so for instance, with the SEC, we talk about, you know, using AI and predictive modeling in trading desks, et cetera. So there's how AI filters out is a big deal. The other piece of it as well that sort of, I think, hindered it is on the data center side and the energy, you know, the energy grid piece. The question is, what can the reconciliation bill do in terms of producing additional help there? And then the on the backside of that, what kind of energy policy can get rolled out to help support the infrastructure that you're going to need for AI? Right now, I think you've seen a lot of fundraising going on. And I mean fundraising in terms of like the VC side of the thing, where they can start rolling out projects. And then I think the idea is that on the backside of that, we'll start to see some more regs gearing, putting guardrails on how that activity can get deployed.
Great. Yeah, that's really interesting. So one question I had for you, Matt, is did you see anything that surprised you in the tax provisions of this big, beautiful bill?
I would say that it was surprised me that what was in it, what wasn't in it, I think we were kind of expecting was some crypto tax, particularly around wash sales. I am still hopeful that when the Senate does its work, we will see more of that in the bill. I know Senator Lummis has been very much hard at work on this, working with Chair Crapo and Senate Finance staff about how to pull that together. But this is also, and it's another good moment for crypto to sort of take the next step forward in its evolution as an industry. And we do need to get some tax rules in place so we can help foster that environment going forward.
Great. Anything that you wanted to discuss that we haven't talked about yet that kind of is on the horizon for you and that you're interested in?
No, we really hit the waterfront there. I would say that I do think I am fascinated about this quick pivot on the GSEs. So I do think it's not something that the president has talked about this before. Clearly, it was a big part of the first administration, and it never got to fruition. I think the surprising piece here is how soon it came up. I think most of us were expecting this to be a 2026 project, particularly with the committees of jurisdictions so caught up, you know, in some other areas. This is a big deal. And both committees, both chairs have talked about weighing into this extensively. So I'm fascinated to see how quickly this turns, and then sort of the involvement that the committees are going to have and help them make this come to fruition.
Great. Well, thank you for coming back to join us today, Matt. It has truly been a pleasure always to have you back. I'm going to ask you to keep coming back all the time.
Thanks, Michelle. It's always a pleasure to talk with y'all.
And I wanted to point everybody to our prior conversation, which is available at the FactSet Insight podcast on Apple Podcasts. But also, please feel free to visit the FactSet blog. I do think that there's a lot of insights there that we will continue to share, particularly on tariffs and on some, as I mentioned earlier, some important modeling that we've been doing on stress testing and inflation. With that, I will say thank you to everybody who listens, and thank you, Matt, again for joining us. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks, Michelle. Talk soon.
The FactSet Insight podcast is for informational purposes only. The information contained within is not legal, tax, or investment advice. FactSet does not endorse or recommend any investments and assumes no liability for any consequence relating directly or indirectly to any action or inaction taken based on the information contained in this podcast episode. The views shared by third-party contributors do not necessarily reflect the opinion of FactSet.